Hello, hello. It's another case of Mixtape and Identity, and my guest this week is Jude Pearl. Yes, thank you so much for joining me. This is episode 84 of Mixtape and Identity with Jude Pearl. Jude is a comedian and musician, as I'm sure you know. Someone I've been dying to get on the show for a long time, and yeah, a few emails back and forth, and we finally managed to make it happen. And it was an absolute delight. She was amazing. Obviously, Jude is someone who's very passionate about music, so the list that I got initially was about 25 songs long for 15 song playlist. So we had to do a little bit of narrowing down, both before the recording and during as well. But I mean, look, they're all great songs. I think four covers that she sent me, all of them are absolute bangers. So yeah, the whole list was great, and it's a great conversation. She's just very, very funny. As I said, really into her music and put a lot of thought into it. So yeah, it's the perfect chat, really. If you're new here, if you don't know what I'm talking about, basically the premise of the show is I've sent Jude a list of 15 song prompts. She sent me back some songs, and what you're going to hear is us going through the songs that she's picked and why she picked them. So if you want to listen to any of the songs that we're talking about, or if you want to refer back to them, I have put all the songs in a playlist, and that's available on Spotify, so that's going to be in the description of the podcast. Just click on the link there. I'll be back at the end of the show. But for now, we'll jump in. This is episode 84 of Mixtape Identity with Jude Pearl. So obviously, first things first, with the list. So as we mentioned, you've sent over quite a lot of songs in the first draft. So how did you find putting the list together?
It actually took a really long time. Like, I feel like I did it over, 2 weeks. Like, I would sort of, you know, at the end of doing a bunch of emails, I'd be like, all right, I've got to add a few more songs this list. And, like, surprisingly difficult to... It's always, like, just difficult to pick one song, which is why many times I gave you five or six songs when asking for just one. It kind of, like, not... Obviously, like, an enjoyable process, but definitely it took a long time to try and think of something that really captured that period of time.
Right. Okay. Because there's a few different elements to it that some people, I'm not gonna say struggle with, but like have, you know, found it difficult to try and pin down. So it's like picking one particular song, or having the sort of mindset that it needs to reflect your personality somehow, or that show who you are through this playlist.
That's funny you say that, because it is a bit like, I feel like there were times when I was worried a song I was picking was like not cool enough. It was just too, like, particularly when we get into the karaoke songs, you know, I'm like, I feel like I should pick something cooler for karaoke, the coolest activity of all.
Yeah, that's where it's most important to pick a very cool song. Absolutely. I've always said that. And in terms of your music listening then, how often do you actually listen to music at the moment?
I pretty much listen to like an album every couple of days, I reckon. Like at least a full album, maybe twice a week. Or sometimes it's like I'm really obsessed with one particular song that I just is just kind of on repeat all the time. So I mean, I feel like I'm listening to music a lot, and I, you know, kind of never get sick of I think I answered that. an album a couple times a week, I reckon.
Is it different when you're in the midst of, like, you know, obviously, so you've just been working on like an album, and then you know, before Christmas it was you were working on a play. Does the music that you're listening to differ when you're in that sort of creative mindset compared to being able to listen to it for the sake of it?
Sure. Yeah, I guess like when I'm working on an album, I feel like I'm probably not Like, there's, I'm sometimes, I'll be listening to tracks that I'm like, oh, you know, this is like a reference track for this song. And so, like, trying to get certain elements of, like, oh, how did they get that production to sound like that? So there's a lot of, like, bitsy kind of listening to different things.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wouldn't be, like, probably sitting down and, like, just enjoying a whole album whilst making my own album. But it's funny, like, during that play, because the play was, like, a Christmas play, and I, for, like, closing night gifts for everyone who worked on the show, because I was, like, the musical director of the play, I got everyone, like, a cheesy Christmas album.
Lovely.
Which I'm sure some of them might have enjoyed, and I know some people absolutely detest Christmas music, but, like, because I just had all these CDs that I, you know, hadn't given as gifts yet, I was just, like, listening to an absurd amount of Christmas albums during that play for that reason, just because, but I get really excited about cheesy Christmas music. I really like it, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you as well, so you see when you said, like, having, like, reference tracks for when you're recording an album and making music, so, like, I'm a big fan of your music, and I think one of the things that you have to get in there. one of the things that I really like about the music that you write is, like, I think the lyrics are really well written, very clever, very tightly written, obviously very funny. But I was curious, is, like, when it's a musical, in that sort of musical comedy area, do you have reference points for, like, that kind of lyric writing as well, or does that have to come from just you?
That's a really good question, because I've never thought about that, and I don't think that I'm definitely would be influenced by lyrics and stuff, but I don't think I consciously go out and seek references the way that I do with, like, music and production and stuff like that. But yeah, that's something I'm going to think about more but I don't think I do that consciously.
Okay. I was curious as well, because I know, like, from speaking to other musicians, that sometimes one of the risks of listening to a lot of music when you're making your own music is that you know you have references, but you also then accidentally, like, rip off other songs, or just accidentally write a song that's already there. So yeah, I was just curious about that from a lyrical perspective, because I think your music more than most kind of, you know, focuses on that lyrical side of things, is obviously very important in comedy, maybe compared to that, just straight music.
Yeah, well, it's also because I'm definitely, I know what you mean about accidentally being worried that you're going to take something from an existing thing. And I feel like the times where I have, found, like, a really big similarity between something I've done and something that someone else has already done is always been stuff that I've not listened to, it's, like, stuff that I've listened to in passing. And then I think there's a word for it. It's like cryptomnesia, where it's like you hear something and then you, like, it goes in there and you forget about it, and then later your brain spits it back up and you think it's kind of your idea. And, like, I'm way more worried about that. But I think, like, if you're really intentionally listening to stuff as references, you're way less likely to kind of rip it off, because you're like, you know that it can't sound exactly the same.
Yeah, sure.
But, like,
but
then there's people like, oh my gosh, why can't Rachel Bloom is someone that I get compared to a lot, and, like, I've, like, not watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, like, and it, but it's just fun. I think there's, like, you know, we both probably have a lot of similar, you know, we're, like, anxious Jewish people that so it's like we have, like, similar topics that we come to, and, like, there have been times when I'm like, that is so crazy similar that I had no idea that existed until someone, you know. So it's like it is kind of interesting how that stuff happens. And I think there is, especially the more and more content that is made, I think there's just more, you're going to have more people, like, being very similar to each other as well. Like,
Makes sense. All right, perfect. So we'll dive into the list then. So song one is a song you fell in love with straight away. So you went for Tightrope by Janelle Monáe.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was like the whole seeing like the music video. I'm pretty sure I saw someone showed me the clip of her performing it on Letterman. Okay. Like when, and it was like, she's got like the, it was the whole suit thing and just the like, you know, at that era in pop music, I kind of feel like there was really like, it was quite homogenized in that sort of like early 2010s.
Yeah.
So I just kind of was like, it was the song, but it was also just her whole, the whole thing that she was bringing was just kind of blew me away. And I was just so excited that someone like that existed.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She is unbelievable. It's, you can tell that there's a huge amount of thought and love has gone into everything, like the clothes, the lyrics, the song, the production. She is unbelievable. Yeah
Like quite a force of nature. And yeah, and like in, I guess in that, similar to like the Prince and the Bowie kind of, like the very much the artist that is like embodying every aspect of what being a music artist means in the pop world, like the emphasis on artist, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, then song two is a song that took you a while, so you went for Let's Fall in Love by Ella Fitzgerald.
So I kind of, this could have been like a lot of different Ella Fitzgerald songs, but like when I was maybe 13 or 14, like, I don't know what, I assume that you don't have JB Hi-Fi over there, but there's like, it's like a, you know, just like a,
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't think they really sell CDs very much anymore. Mostly just like washing machines and microwaves, which is sad, but you know, when I was a teenager, it was like, one of the biggest, you know, CD stores, and they had the little bargain bins, you know, where kind of where I started to find like jazz albums for like $5. They had like Miles Davis, Sketches of Spain, and there was like an Ella Fitzgerald, I guess it was like a compilation CD, and it just had a lot of her big band tracks. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like I listened to it when I was 13, and it's like I'd never listened to jazz before, like, you know, consciously, and it just like, I just feel like I just didn't understand what I was listening to. I'd never heard a voice like hers before. And then a few years later, I listened to it again, and I was like, this is the best thing I've ever heard. And I just, yeah, she's like one of my favorite singers, which is, you know, I'm not obviously, it's cliche because a lot of people have her as their favorite singer, but yeah, but I just didn't understand what I was listening to at first. Right. I was like, what is this sound?
Yeah, sure. Well, like what were your frames of reference and what kind of stuff were you listening to at the time?
Like growing up, like most of what my parents kind of had on was like the Beatles, Carole King, Simon and Garfunkel, like Roberta Flack, like Joni Mitchell. I feel like that was kind of the, you know, and like I guess like Aretha Franklin and maybe some Ray Charles as well was like this, you know, leading into the soul sort of area. And then like when I was about, I think probably 13, I feel like I first found out who Stevie Wonder was, and that kind of changed everything. Right. And then like I through that sort of found like Motown and soul and lots of other stuff, and like just was going to secondhand CD stores and finding things like once I got a job and could do that. And then so it's like I, as a teenager, it was like this soul music was kind of something I discovered, and then, but not jazz wasn't something that I had really ever heard.
Right. Okay. I get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stevie Wonder is like, I'm very jealous of what you're saying there about the, that sort of kickstarting a journey for you, because,
oh yeah,
I love Stevie Wonder. And I went through a period where I was like completely obsessed with Ray Charles. But I did all my deep dives with like bands, Looking back, some pretty mediocre bands, to be honest. But I really wish, in hindsight, I should the Stevie Wonder was the ending point for me. It really should have been the beginning. If I'd taken that step further and got into more of that music, I think I would have been much happier for it. That's something I tried to get into more recently. But yeah,
The important thing is that you found him now, and that that he's in your life.
There's still time. There's still time.
Look, I can't actually remember. Maybe there isn't a Stevie Wonder song on my list, which actually seems really strange now, because I would say, if I had to name biggest musical influence, it probably would be Stevie Wonder. So it is kind of weird that he's not actually on the list, I don't think.
Oh yeah.
But I kind of remember the first time I actually became aware of who he was on a Saturday Night Live sketch with Eddie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it was the sketch where Stevie Wonder is auditioning to be a Stevie Wonder impersonator, and it's sort of they have the back and forth thing for a while, and then Stevie Wonder's kind of pretending to sing really badly, and then he suddenly kind of comes out and sings amazingly. It's I think, because it was back in the days of video stores, and I was hiring Eddie Murphy best of SNL, so I just kept rewinding it probably 40 times, just to be what the hell, who is this person? And just he's kind of on another planet.
He's on it. All right, song 3 is a song from your introduction to music. You've gone for Moving On Over by Hank Williams.
It was my mom's from Texas, so we've got to have some country music in there, and she's from El Paso, and Hank Williams was another CD that was on rotation a lot as when I was a kid, and I kind of feel I know a lot of people have very mixed feelings about country music, but I always I really like that Hank Williams era, because it's proper. I guess if you want to talk about lyrical inspiration, I guess country music is so hilarious and so devastating. There's the most jaunty songs about people basically threatening that they're going to kill themselves. And you're this is an amazing, it's very, a music comedy is so much of the juxtaposing of a jaunty music with something really upsetting, kind of oh no, but it's funny. So I think country music has been doing that very, very well for a long time.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of a lot of those songs where it's kind of like ABBA. It's if you you can just enjoy it for what it is, but then you have moments where you hear what they're actually singing about, and you're like, oh god, right.
Yeah.
I'm sad now.
Totally.
Yeah, I enjoyed Moving On Over. It's a very silly song.
Quite silly. He has a few that are much more devastating, but that one's also just because in the song it's and I actually don't. This is bad, but I don't know who wrote it, because I know there's a bunch of versions of this song. I want to think that he wrote it, but maybe I'm wrong. But the whole song is saying move over to move over big little dog, because the big dog's moving in. And as a kid, I truly just thought it was about hanging out with a dog. I didn't understand that he was getting kicked out of his house because he had cheated on his wife. What a fun song. That's great. It's enjoyable for all ages.
Yeah, I'll admit it took me a few listens to understand that was going on. And I think part of it is my son's been watching a lot of Mickey Mouse's Clubhouse.
Cool.
So I had that kind of cartoon image in my head.
Yeah, you were watching it with that filter, that sort of much more innocent filter. Yeah.
So I was imagining a song from the perspective of a big dog. And I didn't really understand. I didn't understand how the verses connected to the chorus.
Yeah.
But we got there. We got there.
Also, I just looked it up, and Hank Williams did write that song. I just wanted to.
Perfect.
I was like, I should know the answer to that.
Excellent.
Well, if it makes you feel better, it took me 20 years to understand what the song was about. So, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I'm a fully grown man. I probably should have. I should probably be able to you know, assess music a little bit more critically than I did. Anyway, all right. Song 4 is a song that makes you happy. So you went for September by Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah, and this was one of the ones where I was like worried that. It's, well, because, like, this is a song that I play a lot in, like, cover bands, and I have been playing it for, you know, 10 or 15 years or something, and, like, I just never get sick of it. It just makes it, and I was worried to say it because I was worried it was, like, not a cool enough, especially because Earth, Wind & Fire have so many, like, crazy, cool songs that are, like, so, like, interesting and complex, and, like, September is, even though I still think it's got lots of complexity to it, it's like one of their more like poppy songs, but it's just like, it just makes me so happy. I love singing it, I love listening to it, I just like never get sick of that song.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those songs that, like, some songs are classics for a reason. I feel the same way about like Superstition by Stevie Wonder. I think that's a very like, for me, that's a fairly maybe a basic answer to say, like, that's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah, sure.
But it's a great song. So
it's really good.
I'm not going to apologize for it. And I think September is the same. It's yeah. It's unbelievable. It makes you so happy. Like, as soon as it comes on, it's got great energy. Also, like, I only find this out through doing the podcast because the song's been picked on the show before, but. First released on their album The Best of Earth, Wind & Fire.
Is that how it was first released?
Yeah, it was first released on their Best of album.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, which, I mean, fair enough.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Sure. They were confident. They knew it was they knew it was going to be a best of before it was released.
Yeah. It stopped on the recording. They were like, yes, absolutely. Lock it in.
I feel like it's like also the production of it is so, there's something about like the sound of when it opens, like the guitar and the bass together. It's like there's Earth, Wind & Fire is so good at having like these really seemingly simple parts divvied up between a huge band, but it's like, it's just so, it's like the perfectly satisfying itch, like getting scratched or something. Like, it's, I don't know. Yeah, there's something just very magic about the way that it's, the track sounds as well. But, and like, so, and Superstition's cool because also it's like, I love pop songs that are about something a bit kind of left of center. Like, it's a very, it's a funny song to, like, it's funny topic to write a song about. It's kind of like Thriller as well. You're like, sure, like, why not? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, 100%.
So I respect your choice.
Don't overthink it. Just if that's what you're feeling, just
go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. that's talent though, isn't it? You just you just decide to write a weird song about Superstition and it comes out like that. I mean, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
All right, song 5 is a song that makes you sad. So you're going for Far From the Home I Love from Fiddler on the Roof.
And it feels really cliche, and this was one that was like hard for me to pick because like I'm a big crybaby and a lot of things make me cry, and especially like songs. There's so many that, like, you know, I was like kind of tossing up between this and like Both Sides Now, and I was like, oh, it's again, it just feels so cliche to say that, but like this one is just like one that is like, sometimes I just like think about the song and I can just start crying just because it's like so, and I mean that whole show is the sound of the songs and like the lyrics and the just the harmonic structure of those songs is like just hits me in my deepest guttural emotional senses. So it's, yeah, and like that song I feel like is a particularly kind of heartbreaking one. So look,
yeah,
it feels cliche, but
yeah, again, sometimes they're cliche for a reason. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, God, it's I've not seen the show.
Sure.
Like this is, I was coming to this like with new context, but
yeah.
I mean, I suppose that's the joy of a musical number, is that it kind of gives you the context and then,
yeah,
you know, sits you in it. But God, it is devastating.
It's like,
yeah,
it's very sad. Yeah. And like, it's funny with that show as well. Like, there are the upbeat songs are mm-hmm. still sad. They still right. are like, you know, like what you were talking about before, when you, like, even with ABBA or something, like you're listening to a song and yeah. then you're like, mm-hmm. then you kind of re-listen to the lyrics and you're like, oh, Jesus. And like, this show, I feel like there's, you know, like, I guess, like Matchmaker and L'Chaim and like, there's like lots of songs that sort of are very kind of high energy and very funny. And then there's like lines in there that you're like, oh my God, that is so upsetting. But this song is kind of like, oh no, this is just all sad. Like,
I remember watching a documentary years ago. I can't remember what it's called now, but it was just about Jewish comedy. And it was just a continuous through line through that show, was just that this didn't really talk about music so much, but it's just like there's always this sort of like this underpinning of like some kind of sadness to all of their comedy. I think the joke that they told to start it was there's two Jewish women in a restaurant and one of them says to the other, the food here is terrible. And the other one turns and says, yeah, and such small portions.
That's a classic.
And they use that as like just to set the tone. So I've not really thought about it or given it much thought, but it makes sense that would bleed into the sort of the music side of things if that is the sort of the cultural underpinning of that.
I feel like that show has so much... it's so much of that. And, like, I guess what's... I mean, this is sort of, like, you know, more tangential, but, like, you know, because Fiddler on the Roof is, like, based off of a... Like, the character Tevye is, like, the main character, and it is, you know, based off of a character that was written by a guy named Sholem Aleichem. And, like, after I only kind of first saw the film, like... a couple of years ago, like I think I avoided it because I thought, I was like, ugh, I don't want to watch that, like, you know, because I didn't want to be a cliche, but like, sure. And then I watched it and I just like really loved it. And so then I started reading some of Sholem Aleichem's stuff, and it's like, you know, he's from like Eastern Europe, and like, I think there's so much American Jewish comedy that people are very aware. It's such a like hugely internationally recognized culture, and like Australian Jewish culture is really, really different. And like, what was nice for me is like that was sort of taking like the humor's origin back to like, you know, a part of the world that was like, well, I have kind of a connection to that, like much less than I do to the American Jewish culture. So it was like sort of seeing like the origin of this Jewish humor kind of coming from that Yiddish background, and but so I think that's also what was kind of nice, is like it's you know, it's Jewish humor, but it's also like coming from like sort of seeing like the roots of that even for like American Jewish humor. Sort of interesting.
Makes sense. Song 6 is a song to relax to. So again, we've got two here. So we've got In Your Eyes and Desafinado.
Oh, yeah. I'll go with the Peter Gabriel one, probably just because I listen to that one more.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just very... Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say about this one, just that I just... I love Peter Gabriel. He's got, like... He's another one where it's, like, like sledgehammer is another one of those superstition style.
Yeah, sure.
Well, where it's like, it's very, yeah, it's just kind of a totally interesting way of writing lyrics and like, yeah, it's,
yeah, it's an odd metaphor. Yeah. Being a sledgehammer. It's not, it's not a common one.
No.
Yeah.
It's very like, I mean, I kind of really like the way Peter Gabriel, like, if I was to want to have anyone's career, I think it would be his. Like, in terms of, he's so, like, widely known, but also, like, I bet he would never get bothered in the street either. Like, because it's like, I don't know what he looks like. He seems like a kind of an everyman kind of a... and then he does all these interesting projects. I don't know. It just seems like he's found the sweet spot of, like...
Mm.
You know, had a couple of really big hits and then just does whatever he wants. That's the vibe I get, having done no research into his life at all. It's just an assumption that I'm making.
Well, look, having done no research myself, I'm more than happy to go along with it. but I, I'm really getting into Peter Gabriel recently, and I have avoided him for quite a long time because I... kind of what you were saying about, like, it's not the coolest choice. there are some bands that are like kind of punchlines in a way. And
yes,
I don't know if you've watched Peep Show.
Just a little. I mean, I really like. I've just not watched it properly, sure. But yeah, so, I've seen bits and pieces.
He is literally a punchline in that show. Like Mark, who is a nerd, essentially listens and enjoys Peter Gabriel and Genesis, and he is mocked for it, and as a result I just never gave him the time of day.
Yes.
So it's only really through doing this show that I've got to listen to more of his music, and he's great. He's so good.
He's really good.
Yeah. We listened to, like, the first time I heard Sledgehammer was through doing this show, so it was only a couple of years ago,
right.
And like, I was like, this song fucking rules. This is so good. Yeah. Like, yeah. Why have I avoided this for so long?
I know exactly what you like. I mean, that song is like to me like a perfect pop song in that like the production and like the totally like obviously taking the piss kind of lyrics and like but so like catchy and just it's really interesting but really accessible. Like I just feel like he. It's funny what you say about the punchline thing because like I was talking to someone the other day about like you know I grew up watching South Park a lot and I feel like there was and like Beavis and Butthead and there was like I think this slew of you know shows that kind of inadvertently became like tastemakers where they would just if they made fun of a celebrity or a band or anything on their show like there would be like financial repercussions downward sales there's a big you know I just think of it because of Genesis but like the South Park like ripped into Phil Collins like right. I think it was after I think Phil Collins like won the Oscar for best song over the South Park guy. So I don't know but they were like they just like relentlessly ripped into him in this one episode and for years like that was my introduction to Phil Collins. I had no idea who he was and so years I was like this, I just thought he was also a punchline, and then like I can't actually remember how. So I think someone lent me the oh my gosh, the album Something Jacket. I can't remember the name of the album, but it's like the word jacket is in the album, and it's got like Sussudio on it. And I was like, wow, this is so fun, and it's totally my kind of you know, it's like it's a little cheesy in that you know, it's like happy sounding music, and I just like loved it, and then. Yeah, so I feel like it's weird. Yes, heaps of things that I ruled out because of South Park, like Barbara Streisand. Like heaps of actors that I'm like, they must be terrible. They really let a lot of people have it.
Yeah. And
it's a bit of a shame in a way. There's some good crazy. Good artists out there that maybe didn't deserve it as much.
Yeah, yeah. No Jacket Required.
No Jacket Required. Yes, thank you. That's the one.
All right, cool. Song 7 is a song from your preteen years. So you're going for the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yes, it's just Friday, the song and also the name of the album. And mm-hmm. that was like, I reckon for about 2 years, mm-hmm. that was like the only album I listened. I just listened to that album like every day after school. I wanted to be Lauryn Hill. I just loved everything about her. And like, like I got introduced to her through Sister Act 2, I think, like a lot of people. And like, or probably people my age who didn't know her from like the Fugees and stuff. So that song, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, is like one of the first songs that I played and sang in front of, and like, you know, when I was about 13 or 14 maybe. Oh, really? I like performed it at like a little like house concert that my music teacher at high school used to put on at people's houses. And I was like always trying to copy her melismas, and I've given up on trying to do her melismas now. They're a bit too much for me, but she does them very well.
Yeah, sure. God, right, so there's quite a lot tied into this then. Lovely.
I think my sister had that album, and that's sort of how I just kind of permanently borrowed it off of her. I probably still have it. I mean, I feel like that whole like, yeah, I mean, obviously it was like such a widely recognized album, is like, you know, this, I think, was it the first rap album that won best album? I can't remember, or something like that. I can't remember.
I think it was. Which I was gonna say, actually, because like, you know, in the context of, we've been talking about, you know, not having the coolest choices, I think, you know, the preteen years is definitely the one that's predisposed to have the worst not cool answers, and this is maybe the coolest album you could have picked, like one of the greatest hip hop records of all time. I mean, that's not when you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to get like,
no,
get
you're
the,
supposed
yeah.
to. Yeah, yeah, I think I went reverse. I like that was
peak.
My coolest at 13, and then I think it's like when I'm so contrary and like stubborn, and I feel like when was from kind of like late primary school, so I was born in 1989, so like when I was about 9 or 10 was kind of when like the Spice Girls, the Backstreet Boys, like all that era of like pop, the Max Martin era of pop music kind of happened. And like I was so, anything that was like instantly really popular I immediately hated, which was like socially a very bad choice to make, but and I was like I was like obsessed with the Beatles when I was 9, and like it's like I kind of dug my heels, the more the Spice Girls and Britney Spears got popular, the more I like dug my heels in, and I was like, no, like I hate all of this, and like and I kind of feel like that went up until like basically I finished school and went into uni, and then because I like studied jazz at uni, like I mean jazz musicians are like the worst for like not like having a like a tick of approval of like what non-jazz you're allowed to listen to, or even jazz, you know, it's like obviously Michael Bublé is like the enemy of jazz because he's successful and like, you know, but like there was contention about like, you know, obviously things like Lauryn Hill, Erykah Badu, D'Angelo, all that stuff was totally, you're allowed to listen to that. But like Michael Jackson, too popular, like, you know, even though he's got, it was just all this weird. And I think that's also just being that age, right? Like when you're a teenager and in your early 20s, like you're so kind of opinionated and like you think you know everything. And
I know. Very, very similar. And looking back on it, you're just looking at the world, assuming that everyone is stupid and wrong. There's like this music, everyone likes it, and everyone is stupid, therefore the music is bad. I mean, I had a lot of that. I mean, I do think, if I'm giving myself a little credit, you know, a lot of that was around the sort of X Factor pop idol era as well, where
sure.
I think pop
yeah.
did become very manufactured and boring, basically.
Yes. yeah.
So
yeah,
there's definitely elements of that, but yeah, I also, you know, dismissed anything that was in the charts, and even like bands I liked or artists that I liked or genres that I liked, if there was something that bled through, it was just like, nah.
Yeah,
not,
yeah.
Not for me.
It's not, yeah. So, yeah. And yeah. It is maybe that, like, you're right, like, there's, like, a lot of things going on. It's, like, also that South Park era of, like,
right, yeah,
of making fun of things that are
yeah.
kind of, like, it felt like that was that the late 90s, or maybe, like, probably earlier than that, too, but, like, the kind of 90s into the 2000s was, like, a real, like, the cynical... Mm-hmm. View of things was sort of the popular way to look at, like, you yeah. know, so like anything that was really like overtly happy was immediately the most uncool thing. Because like now yeah. looking back, like there's a lot of songs that I play like in cover bands that like I grew up listening to, and it's like I love Max Martin's songs. Like, I mean, it's like when you look at what it is, you're like, it's yeah. extremely well-made
yes.
pop music. It's yeah. so catchy,
yeah.
really well-produced in that, you know, and it's like, it's, I think my appreciation of just songs for what they are is like much more now than, yeah, when I was a teenager.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was definitely like, that for me was like the first step in my journey when it came to like appreciating pop music, was then accepting that pop music could just be fun and didn't have to have yeah. like a message, and it didn't have to like depress you or
yeah.
So yeah, like the example for me is Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh yeah, oh, good example. Yeah,
so I resisted for a long time, and then I kind of got to a point where I was like, you know, obviously she doesn't have to be saying anything in "I really, 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 really like you." That's it. There's not much more depth to it, but there doesn't have to be. It's just a fun song.
Yeah.
And then when you allow yourself to get into that mindset, then you can actually get into, well, actually, Carly Rae Jepsen is one of the best pop artists going and has some incredible songs and albums.
Totally.
That go beyond this idea that I had where it can just be fun. No, actually, you know, they can also be incredible artists and make amazing
yes.
music as well. So yeah, it's a fun journey getting your head out of your ass. But
yeah, sure. We did it. Yay, go us. We made it. Like, I think it's also like the way that I mean. And I wonder if maybe for people who are like teenagers now, I don't know if music is culturally as significant as it was like when we were so it's like, but I think maybe when we were younger, it's like your identity is so wrapped up in like the things that you like, because you're still finding who you are. And I think as you get older and you're like more comfortable just being whatever you are, you're like,
yeah, exactly.
you feel more comfortable to say like, I really like this NSYNC song. I think it's just a really fun song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember reading about I Want It That Way. Because, I remember reading. I think Max Martin himself said it, that the verse and the chorus don't make any sense together. They
Lyrically.
Yeah, they don't
yeah,
connect
yeah.
in any
no.
way, shape, or form.
No.
But that's not what it's just written to sound good and to feel nice to sing, and yeah. it works.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, you were asking me before about lyrical inspiration for
yeah.
things, and it's like obviously I love good lyrics that I like, you know, I spend so much time working on lyrics and everything, but like when I'm listening to something, I'm very much one of those people that if it sounds really good, I'm like, I don't really care
what
the word. Like, it's like, this song is about absolutely nothing, but it sounds so good and it's just making me feel really good. So, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want like horrible messages, but like in the I
yeah,
Want It
sure.
That Way kind of level of just like,
right.
Who
yeah,
knows
yeah.
what this is about. Like,
yeah,
it's
no,
not
I get
about
you.
Anything.
I get you. Yeah. Yeah, if you're listening to like Blurred Lines, then you probably that's you apply a little bit of critical thought and you think, actually no, this is a rape anthem, and we'll put that on the side.
That's a really good example of a song that I'm like, we don't really do that song in like at weddings and stuff now, but like when we when that song came out, we were playing it a lot. It was one that I was like, all right, here we go, here comes this song. I get like, you know, that's a perfect example of a song that I think does sound very good, but is it's too, the lyrics are a bit too bad, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's reasonable, yeah. All right, song 8 is a cover.
Yeah.
So we have Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow by Roberta Flack.
Yeah, and obviously it's like written by Carole King, but I feel like the most famous version of the song is the Shirelles, I think. Like, that's the one that I would assume most people know, but I just think it's like, you know, the cover like thing is really interesting. Like, I feel like it's very rare that I'll, like, whatever version I hear first is usually the one that I like, which I think is how most people operate. But like, this version is just like her, her voice is just like one of those voices that just kind of goes directly into your, just goes like right into the center of your heart. And it's like, the song is such a, I just think it's such a like well written, like it's such a perfect song, and like the, for what it's about. And I kind of feel like her version, it feels the most like, oh yeah, that this feels like she's singing about what it's about. I don't know if that sentence made any sense, but
I know what you mean, like the tone lends itself to the lyrics maybe a little bit better, but it is gorgeous. It's such a beautiful song. I really liked all of these covers, by the way.
Same. I mean, they're all very enjoyable. They're so fun. They're like such good songs, and the Aretha Franklin "What a Fool Believes" is pretty. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's like, it's great.
Yeah,
it's one of those ones that like, I don't think she's doing anything massively different with that song, but
not crazy.
It just sounds like a completely different song. It's stunning.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Song 9 is a song you would sing at karaoke.
Yeah.
So these are the cool choices. So we've got Rosanna by Toto and Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Yeah. I mean, like, so Don't Stop Believing is, like, definitely a song that I think, even if people are like, ugh, I hate this song, like, if it comes on, they'll still, it's like Pavlovian, like, you just have to sing along. But I just, like, I mean, I know this is a karaoke question, so it's not really relevant about Journey, but, like, Steve Perry's voice to me is, like, I just can't even, so I don't know if you remember the We Are the World video that happened, like, and it had, like, a million music artists in it, and I remember watching it probably as a teenager, seeing it, and like I the line that, like, I didn't know who everyone was, but I just remember this when Steve Perry sang, I just remember being like, who's that? And I couldn't believe his voice, and this was like kind of pre-internet, I guess, so I couldn't figure out who it was. And then years later I found out who it was, and I was like, this guy, another, totally different to Roberta Flack, but just like another one of those voices that just like, just so like, it just hits me in all the, it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just such a good voice.
Yeah. Oh, he's unreal. He's unreal. So like, what's the, is there much thought process in terms of like picking a karaoke song? Is it like crowd pleasing, or what's the, or have you just picked songs that you think like go down well when you're playing in cover bands, or?
Well, I've only sung karaoke like twice in my life. Right. It's so strange. Like, it sounds silly saying this, but I feel like, you know, when you're a singer, like, karaoke's a weird, because you're also like, you feel like you don't want to sing it too well. Like, it seems like singing really, really well at karaoke feels like strange to me. So it's
I agree.
But the two times that I did it, these are the two songs that I did. Okay. So that's kind of like, because, you know, and I just went with, because I thought, like, you know, if I could, like, it just, yeah, it just, these just felt like the natural choices. I don't know if there's really
I think you're onto something there, because I think these are songs that you could sing badly or sing phenomenally, and really doesn't matter, because they, like, everyone's on board with it. You'll have people singing along, people have a good time regardless. So I think that's good. Have you seen the Fallon bit that I did with Will Ferrell recently on Don't Stop Believing?
Oh no.
Is it Fallon or Kimmel? Can I remember? I think it's Fallon. It's just him singing this song, like, karaoke style. He's ever so slightly flat, which I think a lot of people pointed out means that he is a very good singer. Yeah, because he's
that he can do that convincingly. Yeah.
And then it's just Will Ferrell in the audience asking questions about every lyric of the song, really enthusiastically. So when he sings "Just a Small Town Girl," Will Ferrell is meaning, like, "Where does she live?
Which town?"
And they did the full song. Like, they did, like, verse, chorus.
Oh man!
Like, they really committed to it, and he did it the entire way through. It's so dumb, and it makes me laugh so hard.
I love that.
Did she go anywhere?
I can definitely imagine Will Ferrell doing that. Oh
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and he's got this, like, weird blonde wig with, like, a short fringe and, like, a green suit. It's everything. It's so, I don't understand the context of any of it, but it is so,
yeah,
it's
so
dumb, and it's, yeah, it's, it just, I don't know. I feel it's one of the, I judge myself for laughing at it, but I think it's great. It's so good.
You just enjoy it unashamedly.
Absolutely. All right, song 10 is a song that reminds you of a specific place. So you went for Go Nuts by Ray Thistlewhite.
Yeah. Thistlethwaite. Yeah. So he released this album. I think the album is called Go Nuts as well.
Uh-huh.
And he's a like Aussie artist, but he's lived, I think he was living in LA at the time that this came. This was probably like almost exactly 10 years ago. And I was like doing a show for like 2 months down Sorrento, which is like sort of in Melbourne. There's like this little peninsula that, and it's sort of like down one end of the peninsula, so it's like about an hour and a half out of Melbourne,
right,
like city. So I was kind of staying down there, and I was just listening to this album on repeat, and like, yeah, he's kind of like, he's like one of the most incredible musicians I've ever seen. Like, he's crazily like virtuosic musician, piano player, singer, everything. And then, but then he like writes these such amazing pop tunes as well. Like, he's so,
right,
it's like, yeah. So, and he comes at it with like this dense, obviously, like, jazz knowledge that he has, but he he's just such a, I love, yeah, again, like I said, but he's another one that I'm like, if the Peter Gabriel thing of like, if I could have someone's career, or more like if I could have his skills, I would love to have I think a lot of people feel that way,
right?
But yeah, he's ridiculous.
I mean, I did sort of allude to it before the recording, or early in the recording, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But this was definitely the song that I felt like this was the song that reminded me of, like, this feels a bit Jude Pearl when I was listening to it. Like, it's similar energies, I think.
I'm very extremely flattered that you would think that. But yeah, and like I said, if I could stand in someone's shadow, it would be his. I'd be very happy to do that. But he's just like, he kind of just has music like oozing out of him at every pore of it. It just seems, it's like, even when you're talking to him, it's like, I feel like he's It just feels like there's music happen. Like, I don't know. It's, but I'm very flattered that you would even make any kind of comparison. that's very nice of you.
All right. It's such a fun song though. It's like, it's incredible. I just thought like, it's maybe that sort of TikTok brain, but that, that I kept on rewinding that bit. Like, nuts. I just, brilliant. So fun.
Yeah. I need to listen to it again, I think.
Yeah. All right. So song 11 is a song that reminds you of a specific person. So you come for Two of Us by the Beatles.
So yeah, this reminds me of my friend Sophie, who she's her artist moniker is Little Wise. So, you know, she's an really amazing like folk singer-songwriter as well. But we went to school together and we did like our final year of, you know, in year 12, we did, we call it here like group music. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you can do like solo music or group music, and or at least when I was at school, maybe it's changed now. But so we did like our year 12, one of our music subjects together, and we sort of, you pick some songs from a list that the government list of, you know, that you have to choose from for that subject, but then you can also pick your own songs. And we did this song, and so it's like very, you know, we just were playing it all year, and so yeah, it's like very much just brings me back to you know, like she's kind of like the first person I played music with as well, because we were sort of playing together since we were in, you know, 13 or 14 or something, so yeah, so it's just like a nice like memory of that.
That's very sweet. I really like that. I think it's a song that, like, obviously it's called Two of Us, but it does, you know, totally it does lend itself to nostalgia quite well, I think, as well, which is nice.
Do you know what's so funny? I didn't even make that connection.
Oh, really?
It's like the title now. Like, it was just because we were practicing it all year, but that's so obvious now that you say that. I'm like, oh yeah, it's called Two of Us. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, I've had a lovely moment with this song now, and it will always be one of my favorite songs now. Because so I was listening to this playlist, as I said before, the recording, listened to quite a lot in preparation, and I had this on in the car, and my son is 2, he was sitting in the back, and sitting in traffic, and this song was playing, and when we were listening to the song, I heard him sing along to the "We're going home" bit. We're going home. And I've only ever heard him sing along to, like, nursery rhymes.
Wow,
so
right.
So this is the first time I've heard him sing along to, like, just a song that's playing in the car.
Oh, wow, that's so cool.
And, yeah, like, I could have wept. It was, it was so beautiful. And then I was preparing for this at the same time as I was preparing for end-of-year shows that I did. And Frankie McNair was on that, and they'd picked in their raps they had Bo Burnham, All Eyes on Me, and there's a refrain in that, like, he repeatedly in that song sings "put your fucking hands up," so I had the Beatles on, and then shortly after I was listening to Bo Burnham, and it was just that bit where I was like, ah, okay, I know I have to be very careful about what I play in the car.
Now that you know that your son is latching on.
Yeah, he's picking up on things now. Yeah, so
it's like the really like sweet, like, "we're going home," and it's like, oh, that's so sweet. It's like, "put your fucking hands up," like, just the juxtaposition.
Yeah,
is quite huge there.
scary. Yeah. So
both. So yeah, no, both great songs though.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I think now my Spotify rap for 2024 is going to be fucked, because it's just going to be Old McDonald for him, and at the moment Chapel Rowan for me. So it's just going to be those are my two top artists are going to be Chapel Rowan and Super Simple Songs.
Great,
beautiful.
I love. Yeah.
together at last.
I really appreciate a just like a fuck Spotify Wrapped. I think it's good that it just, because it's the same, like if you know, I think like obviously when I have to learn a song for a gig or something, and it's like songs that I would never listen to that make their way into a
Right.
into a Wrapped, and I think it's good for us. It keeps us grounded, you know.
I mean, like for example, I felt bad for Frankie because Frankie listened to that song a lot when they were like traveling or preparing for a show, and then like we were obviously talking about it, like it was, you know, it was their number one song for the year, and they were like, this doesn't really define my music taste. And like I had a quiz prepared that was around Bo Burnham songs. Like, I don't really listen to him as an artist. I just like really liked Inside. Anyway, song 12 is the song that motivates you. So you've gone for We're Part of the Night by Lewis Cole.
Yeah. I just motivates in that I get like, I feel like this is a perfect song, like going off of the kind of sledgehammer mentality of like, I mean, it's a completely different song, but I just like production wise, I think it's so good, and it's and like it's a song about something so stupid. I think like my favorite like lyrical genre is like things that are like really stupid, not necessarily like laugh out loud funny songs, but that kind of like, it's just so, it's very silly. And the music video is so silly as well, and just, it's kind of, again, another person that I'm like, oh, wish I could, it's something to aspire to in terms of songwriting and like production and stuff. I just think it's such a great song.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I love this song. I'd assumed that it was something to do with, like, I assumed that, like, you know, that you write best at like 3 a.m. or something, or if it was going to be something. But no, that makes sense as well. If it's just like aspirational,
I think that is part of it too. Like, you know, there's that, it's like totally different. Like, I wrote this, you know, 12 years ago or something, but wrote a song called 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. which is like, you know, I do love songs that are about that, I guess, the weird part of the night thing. And I do love that, like, working nighttime hours is where I thrive. And there's the line in the song where he says, like, is it between 3 and 6 when no one can fuck your shit? It's like, just that line is kind of in my head a lot. It's like the thing of no one's gonna bother you at this time either. That's kind of I enjoy that.
Fair enough. That is another song that will just like it really does like scratch an itch for me, because there's every time I listen to it, I've got a new favorite bit. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of different, like, the last time I listened to it was the that's great. So
I really like the weird, I can't do it because I can't auto-tune my own voice, but he does like does this weird run, and it's like, it's equal parts, I enjoy it rhythmically, but it's also fun, like it makes me laugh as well because it's so ridiculous. And there's so many, I feel like Ray Thistlethwaite, Lewis Cole, like Bill Wirtz are like these, I like really love that type of people that write these kind of really catchy songs, but they have this like dense, like harmonic and rhythmic kind of like, they don't over egg it to make it that, you know, it's completely inaccessible to people, but they've got like, you just can feel that they're coming at it with so much like deep understanding of music, and it's like it's so satisfying to, you know, and they it's like they kind of, they know when to like go for it, and they know when to like restrain or something. I don't, you know, and so I really love those sorts of writers and music artists.
Absolutely. Alrighty, song 13 is a song that someone introduced you to, so you went for Reach Out by George Duke.
This is like, so my ex, who's a bass player, like got me into George Duke and a few other kind of similar, like, lesser known, like, funk artists. Like, he really loved all that kind of stuff, like Don Blackman. And yeah, and like, this is a song that's fair. It's, again, it's kind of a September-y sort of, like, it just makes me really happy that it's so, and like, the lyrics are, you know, whatever, there's a bit silly. It's just about seeing someone that you like, and then yeah, what, like, but yeah, I just, the I enjoy the synth solo in it, is, you know, the, I'm assuming it was played on a keytar. yeah, I just, it's just happy sounding music, you know.
Right,
it's kind of the, yeah,
yeah, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. yeah, okay, good. There are times where this category will be a song someone introduced you to, and it is an X, and I'm a little on edge when that happens sometimes. You're like, what's the vibe here? But that's positive. I like it. That's good.
It's like, and now I can never listen to this song ever again. But right, well, I've had that.
Okay, good.
I still listen to all of that stuff. Yeah, like Brothers Johnson stuff as well. Like, yeah, there's a lot of funk kind of yeah, like, very, where it's like it's like music artists who are like session musicians that went off and made their own solo albums. And so it's kind of cool, they have like coming at it from a, it's like a sort of a different it's like, it's always kind of interesting, like, they're there's a different vibe, but
definitely
yeah.
Alrighty, song 14 is a song you wouldn't expect to like.
I mean, look, I think the John Farnham one is one that I was like, I don't know if that's, I mean, is John Farnham a name that you recognize? Like, do you have, like, I'm really curious about this outside of Australia.
Yes and no. So, like, You're the Voice is definitely a song that, like,
okay,
has made it across, you know, cross hemisphere.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a song that I am aware of.
Yeah.
I think as far as, like, the most popular songs, that's probably it.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be his most, I would say, his most famous song.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess it's just, it's interesting, like, in a similar way to, like, so, okay, I didn't grow up listening to John Farnham. Like, there was a lot of Australian TV and culture that I kind of missed because, like, I was born in the States and then we moved here. And, like, I just feel like huge holes in my knowledge. And then, like, I kind of, again, came to, like, the understanding who John Farnham was in a little bit of that cynical 90s way, where I was like, oh, he's this Australian singer and he's got this cheesy song called You're the Voice and, like, you know, whatever. And then my partner now is also a musician, is like, kind of showed me an album of his and I was like, oh my God, this guy's got, like, one of the greatest voices I've ever heard. And similar to, like, the Steve Perry kind of a vibe, where it's like this really powerful voice, but there's so much dynamic range, but and it's like kind of straight to the, like, a very goes straight into your feelings kind of a voice. And and like, You're the Voice is obviously a song that we do a lot at in cover bands. It's kind of a very common, like, final song of the night. And like, years of doing it, it's like I did start to just go, this is a very good song. Like, I just thought, it's so, like, it's like my cynical early 20s started to wear off, and I was like, this is a really good song, and he's like one of the best singers I've ever heard. So you know, that was my journey to understand how good John Farnham is.
absolutely I mean, I think that's part of it as well. Like, I'm sure you've had the same, like leading a cover band, but, you know, even like at weddings and stuff, when you see, you know, how many people just, like, unironically love particular songs. There's a moment where I think you need to sort of reconsider that cynicism a little bit.
Sure.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, there must be something in this for these people. Yeah. But yeah. It's a phenomenal song. When I listened to this song initially, this is gonna sound weird. It didn't occur to me that it was a person singing. I don't think I appreciated how good his voice is until I realized that that is a man singing that song.
Yeah.
It feels like another instrument, but like when you consider that it's really actually someone who's like actually performing it.
Yeah.
My God, it is it's otherworldly. It's insane.
And he, like, if you watch any like live clips of him, I kind of feel like you just, I mean, I don't know, like, I'm kind of very late to the party of listening to his stuff. It's only kind of in the last couple of years, but I kind of feel like you, he just seems to have that real effortless, like, I think he maybe even said in interviews, like, that he, you know, he doesn't necessarily really practice it, or, like, he's just kind of, I think that's what he said. I hope I'm not, like, misquoting him, but, like, that it's just something that he just is so natural to him, and it's sort of, that's kind of what it looks, he just seems to have this like ease of like this voice just kind of comes out of, I mean, I'm sure that he's worked very 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 hard at it obviously, but like it is kind of like, I know what you mean, like you sort of don't necessarily realize that that's like a person singing. It's funny that you say as well about like the, you know, when you're like playing in cover bands is sort of, it kind of warps your perception a little bit of songs sometimes, like in the sense that I really didn't like this song for a while because I associated it with drunk people falling on top of, actually the last gig that I did before we went into the first lockdown in Melbourne, it was like this, we had kind of I think it was like a Friday the 13th of March, I think was the date, and like I was pulling up to this like wedding gig, and like I just got the email from Comedy Festival that it had been cancelled, and like it was like, and the Grand Prix got cancelled, like it was kind of like it was all happening within the like a few hours or something, and then but we were still just at this wedding, and it was sort of kind of like, it felt like in this world of this wedding none of the news had really hit, and we were like playing, and then it was like we were playing the last song, which was You're the Voice, and this at this particular wedding, like the crowd just was so drunk, and they five people fell into the band, and like and they kind of, a speaker was like falling, and a musician had to reach out and grab, like, and they kind of tripped the power, and it's like, we were like, all right, that's it, we're packing up and we're done, and then they were like booing us because we were packing up, and I was like, you guys tripped the power, we can't, and like we were just like packing up really quickly, and like they were like booing us as we left, and like, and you know, it's just funny because we were playing, I remember that we were playing You're the Voice, and it's like, for a long time, it's like, I didn't like that song because I was associating it with that kind of behavior. But then, like,
yeah, I think it's fair. Yeah.
And then, like, sort of realizing that it's almost like that the song is actually, it's like, you can't blame the song for the animal-like behavior of these people, but you know, sort of trying to like appreciate the song despite the fact that so many people have this very irrational response to it when they mix it with alcohol. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. We got the same in Northern Ireland with Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, it's definitely in that for sure.
And especially in Northern Ireland because it's a song that's sung at football quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
And obviously I'm not gonna get into like all the history, but there's obviously a Protestant Catholic divide in Northern Ireland, and it'll be Protestants singing this, and for the do we'll often sing Sweet Caroline, fuck the Pope, which, you know, it can be difficult to disassociate the two,
yes,
and appreciate that song for what it is when it's, you know, like for whatever reason, the call to arms for
50-year-old
bigots.
Yes.
But yeah, and it's
And it's like the way music is so like so highly emotional, which is why it is such a like great brainwashing tool. But it's like it's very like, you know, in it's like to kind of disconnect those, you know. I can imagine that I wouldn't blame many people for be like, I just hate that song now. It's like, fair enough. Like I understand like what, you know, it's very the neurological emotional connections are just so they're so strong when music's involved. So
I love that. I just heard a quick story, and it's on last week's episode when this comes out, but just another like COVID related story. My last guest Holly is in LA, and they went to a gig that was like literally like must have been round about the same date as yourself. You know, they were just getting to that point where it's like, okay, this is getting serious now. We're starting to understand this is like there's something a little bit more sinister going on, but didn't really yet understand, you know, it was a respiratory, you know, airborne virus, all the rest of it.
So
they went to a gig when all this was going on and wore like kitchen rubber gloves, and then went to a packed venue full of people. Which, you know, when you say like something, like, you know, you hear something, you're like, oh, that really dates it. That really dates it with like this, one week within, window.
It's like within days. That's so good. I like, put, all right, you got to make sure you've got your COVID gloves on. Okay, let's go. Oh, that's so funny.
And then we're
going
to go into a room packed of people. Just don't touch anything. Just don't touch it.
Oh my god! Yeah, that's it. Oh no! If only that was what you needed.
Oh yeah, it would make life a lot easier, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of like when people were like cutting holes in their. It feels like it was an American thing, like cutting holes in the mask.
Yeah.
Because they were like, it's just easier to breathe that way, and you're like, oh, I don't think you fully understand what's going on right now, but
yeah. As long as my ears are pulled down slightly, then I think I'm contributing.
Oh my god!
All right, song 15 is a song you think everyone should listen to. So, true to form, you have picked an album, Le Mystère de Voix Bulgaris by the Bulgarian Women's Choir.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like, I mean, so much of, I think the songs that I've chosen is like, I'm obviously, I have an allegiance to the human voice. Sure. I love, you know, I just kind of feel like the, you know, like Stevie Wonder, Steve Perry, like Roberta Flack, all these different people, like, and John Farnham. It's just like these voices that you just like, kind of for me, like they just like rip my, all the layers off, and you just go, just straight into the feelings. And I feel like this album is like, and it's probably a few different, like, I mean, this is just the one that I have, and I'm sure they have many other very incredible albums, but just like the style of singing is like, so it's just like makes my every hair on my body stand up. It's just like very it's just so incredible. I don't even know how to describe it, but did you, I mean, I'm sorry that I made you listen to a whole album again, but
that's fine. I didn't. No, I listened to a couple of songs, but I could easily go back to it and listen to the full album. Stunning. It's gorgeous. And I think, like gut wrenching. Like I've didn't really look into what the album's about or what they're singing about, but it just, it feels unbelievable. It's it's so emotional, like, so it just does something, like
totally
taps into something. I don't know what exactly, but it is incredible.
And I think, like, you know, it's such an obvious thing to say, but I just like, I mean, singing is like my favorite thing to do in the entire world. And it's been like, you know, I've been doing it since I was a little kid, and I just never get sick of, like, I just love it more and more. And I feel like the, like, singing is kind of, like that, especially that album, like when it's just so pure in its form, and it's just so kind of, it's just like, and singing in harmony as well. It's just, that's like something that I also never get sick of at gigs, is that songs that I've been singing for years and years, and like, cause I play with different people all the time.
Yeah.
And like, you know, so you kind of, everyone just sort of knows the songs.
Yeah.
But like, people sometimes do it slightly differently. And sometimes, like, if you have a few singers on the gig, you'll all just sort of go for like, there's a big vocal harmony bit. And sometimes you all just go for it and all just lands in the right spot. And it's like, I'm like, oh, if I could just live in that moment forever, like, that would be, if I could just live inside vocal harmony for the rest of my life, I would be so happy. So I just, I kind of feel like, just like listening to that stuff for me is just makes me kind of feel like, oh, it's so good to be alive. And I would hope that it might have a similar effect for other people, just to kind absolutely. Of, you know.
I think the fact that it's folk music as well.
Yes, totally.
Like it's kind of like it's the ultimate of what we're talking about with, like, you know, songs are popular for a reason, and classics are classics for a reason, and people connect with them. But, like, folk music is the ultimate example of that. It's a music that has, like, stood the test of time.
Yes.
And literally had to be passed on from person to person. So, like, I have a real sort of emotional connection now with folk music. And, like, music from that sort of, that part of the world, Eastern Europe. And just has so much, like, sorrow to it, and so much depth. And I mean, it's probably folk music is probably sad wherever you go, but but it's just gorgeous. It's so nice.
I mean, and I think it's like, there's, I mean, you're talking about, you know, Ireland before as well. It's like talking about, like, folk music I mean, so many people in Australia, like, you know, obviously so many white people in Australia have that, like, their sort of roots are that far back to, you know, that part of the world as well. And I feel like people, even if they're that removed, like, they'll hear folk music from Ireland, and it's just like, it kind of, they immediately feel sort of connected to it as well. And it's like,
definitely.
So I agree, like, there's something about, there's, I think it's also because a lot of, I mean, it's a huge generalization, but I think folk music also has a real, like, it feels a bit more, like, honest in its intention, where it's like, you know, it doesn't have the, you know, pop music sometimes has ulterior motives, like, in terms of what it's trying to do. So I think there's, like, you also respond to that sort of, like, it's a bit disarming sometimes, just how...
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, true something is being, you're like, oh, Jesus, that's very accurately said lyric. And and it's like, and if they've stood the test of time, they're usually like big human condition topics that it's like are going to be relatable probably forever. And like things that are, deep down in us that, you know, we don't, maybe don't think about every day, but it's like, then you get reminded of it. And I feel like getting in touch with, like, folk music is probably really good for everybody in some way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my lesson for the, you know, if you take away one thing from listening to my very cheesy list of songs, is that get in touch with some folk music. And
yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Well, as I couldn't notice any to end on there too. Do you have anything you want to plug or promote while I have you?
I mean, you know, I've got some albums out on Bandcamp if you want to check them out. And I released a web series at the end of last year, so it's just on my YouTube channel. But otherwise, listen to listen to the Bulgarian Women's Choir. That would be my main suggestion.
big plug. All right, perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure that's in your link tree, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's the top, the number one thing. It's yeah, Bulgarian sure. Women's Choir, then my email list, and then a journey. Just listen to the back catalogue of Journey and Toto. Yeah, it's all perfect. There.
All right, excellent. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that is it for episode 84 of Mixtape and Identity. Thank you so much for listening. Please go and support Jude however you can. There's lots of links in the description of the podcast. The mailing list is there. The Instagram's there for any and all updates. The link tree's there as well. If you want to see what else Jude is up to. One other link that I've shared is Share House the Musical. That's on the 16th and the 19th of May at the Melbourne Arts Centre. That's a musical that Jude has written and stars in. And I can't think of anything better than a musical written by Jude Pearl. So I'm a little upset that I can't make it. If you're anywhere near Australia, get there. If you want to support this show, there's a couple of different ways you can do that. We do have a Ko-fi link set up, so if you want to support us by throwing a couple of quid or a couple of bucks for an episode that you've enjoyed, there's no monthly obligation there. Any and all donations are very much appreciated there. If you're not in a position to do that, absolutely fine. Do support us in other ways. If you can, please share on social media, review the show, rate 5 stars wherever you can, all that good stuff. It goes an awful long way. I will be back next week for episode 85, so in the meantime, look after yourselves, and we'll speak to you then.